Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
I was at home one time. I got a phone call, and it was from a charitable organization. And so my first thought was, oh, I don't want to talk to you. Just want my money. And they said, we don't want your money. Oh, okay, that was interesting. Yeah, we're looking for volunteers. So, you know, a lot of the things that I do at Crosslands Church here, I work, and I look at my worship team investment as volunteer work. And I don't do a lot of volunteering outside of Crosslands Church because, you know, my passion's kind of here. And so I thought, you know what, here's an opportunity to do something kind of outside of my normal bent. And so I said, okay, you know what, sure, I'll volunteer. And so they emailed me. I was supposed to go door to door in the neighborhood and collect money for this organization. And it was coming up a month later, and all of a sudden I thought, oh, crap, now I'm on the hook and I can't get out of this. And I kind of committed to it, so I thought, well, I guess I got to do it, but maybe I'll make it a little bit easier. Our kids were young. I figured I'll make them come with me because they're cute. People would give money more with cute kids. And they refused. So with my generous, compassionate heart, I unwillingly got out there, put the name tag on, and started knocking on doors. And every house, I'd go up and I'd be thinking, I hope they're not home. I hope they're not home. And, you know, about maybe half or a third of the people were home, and they didn't want to see me. I think some people looked at me skeptically, like, are you really working for this organization? You're just scamming people out of money. And that was kind of awkward and uncomfortable. And I did the hour and a half or whatever, going door to door to door to door, and got home, and I had raised a whopping $10. One person gave 10 bucks. And I felt so bad sending that in. So what I did is I made it look better by throwing some of my own money in. And maybe that's how they get it, right? They get the volunteers to throw their own money in. And it was like, okay, I'm done with that. And I think they emailed me the next year, and I just ignored it. So I wouldn't have to do that again. And that's my generous, compassionate heart right there. What happened was at the end of the year, you know, all the tax receipts go out. And I had totally forgot about this. And I got this, like, I got a tax receipt for the money that I had donated. Not for the energy and time, but I thought that was kind of an interesting surprise. So that was kind of neat. We're finishing off our four-part message series that we started 3 weeks ago, called Investing with God, and today the message is entitled Not by Accident. And I've mentioned over the past few weeks that I'm kind of relying on or partnering with a book by a guy named Andy Stanley called Fields of Gold, and if you're interested in reading this book, because it's better than me talking, you can get it on the Crosslands.live app. There's a link to that book there. We're not selling it, but there's a link to Amazon. And on that Crosslands.live in the message notes, that's where it is, you'll also find application questions. Where do we go from here? How do I live this out or apply this on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Because we're a community of followers of Jesus here. We strive to follow Jesus. And that's not something you do for an hour a week. It's a whole life thing. We should have time at the end as well to entertain text messages. My number's on the screen. If you have a comment or question relevant to the message today, we'll entertain those publicly. So just a quick recap from what we've covered over the past 3 weeks. Two major radical thought shifts. The first week we talked about there's this weird correlation, there's this weird expectation that's promised in the Bible that if you invest financially in God's kingdom, you will see a return. It doesn't promise that you're going to win the lottery or anything like that, but God says, I will be faithful, I will give you a return if you invest in my kingdom. It's not a loss when you give. It's an investment when you give. And in fact, a financial investment in God's kingdom is insulated from loss because when the market fluctuates, God's economy doesn't depend on our market in the world. So it's a solid investment. And then the second major radical thought shift starting a couple of weeks ago and followed up last week is that everything we own and everything we earn, if we are followers of Jesus, actually belongs to God. And we are stewards. We're managers of that, which is both a privilege and a responsibility. And last week we talked about that we're called to decide in our hearts what we're going to give. We're not called to give that decision-making capability to somebody else, either through manipulation or heartstring pulling or whatever. We're the ones responsible. So when we do this, not under compulsion, it's a step of courage in trusting God. Today, I'm going to be pulling from a passage in one of Paul's letters. He wrote a significant portion of the New Testament, and he wrote letters to many of the earliest churches trying to help solve problems and all of that and getting the whole thing running. And so I'm going to be relying on a passage from here that's a practical section as well as some experience as well. And so I'm reading in Paul's first letter to the church in Corinth, it's called 1 Corinthians, chapter 16. You're welcome to turn to that in a smart device or if you have a print version or a scroll papyrus or whatever. 1 Corinthians 16, I'm reading the first four verses. It says, this is the end of the letter. Paul is coming to like practical instructions at the end. And he says, now, regarding your question about the money being collected for God's people in Jerusalem, you should follow the same procedure I gave to the churches in Galatia. So basically, he's kind of giving all the churches the same instructions. On the first day of each week, you should each put aside a portion of the money you've earned. Don't wait until I get there and then try to collect it all at once. When I come, I will write letters of recommendation for the messengers you choose to deliver your gift to Jerusalem. And if it seems appropriate for me to go along, they can travel with me. So over the past 3 weeks, we talk about the value of investing in God's kingdom. We've talked about the dangers of being manipulated, having other people determine what you give, but that this is a choice that we make. And I promised last week, today we're going to talk practically how. How do you do it? And so practically, starts with P. I'm going to try to have all my points start with P. Okay, let's see if I can do this. How do we practically trust God in our finances? And I think there's five general ways that we can do it. The first one is, practical trusting in God with finances is prioritized. Paul says, you do it on the first day of the week. He says, don't wait till I come there and then try to collect it all. It's prioritized. There's two kinds of giving, and this is what Andy Stanley points out in his book, Fields of Gold. He says, there's leftover giving and there's planned giving. Planned giving happens first. It's up front. It's intentional. It isn't that leftover giving is greedy, but he says this. He says, they operate by different priorities. The second group sees everything as belonging to God, including the responsibility to meet their daily needs. So leftover giving says whatever is left at the end, I may or may not give that. Planned giving says I'm going to give this and I'm going to trust God to take care of all my needs. See, the problem, this is what he says, the problem with giving leftovers is that your generosity can never exceed your ability to meet your own needs. I'm going to meet my needs, and then whatever's left over, I'm going to give. Instead of, I'm trusting God to meet my needs, and I give first. You ever have someone over for dinner? You prepare a meal, you start serving the food, and you ate first, and if there's anything left over, you give it to your guests. No, we don't do that. We prioritize our guests. We say, you're important. I give you priority. See, the reality is that if we run out, we can always, after they're gone, make a PBJ sandwich or something like that, right? We prioritize what's important. So when we're practically trusting God with our finances, it's prioritized giving. It's first. The second thing is it's premeditated. Paul says, don't wait until I get there and try to collect it all at once. Have a plan, right? When we end up going to a fair number of fundraising events, whether it's here or some of the ministries that we support, and Michelle and I, And what we'll do is we'll plan ahead of time what we're going to give. And so sometimes there's like a dessert auction and they're selling desserts for a whole bunch of money or whatever. But we've already decided. Nobody's going to convince us to spend more than what we planned. We're going with this much money. That's it. I used to take kids to youth conventions and they would have this massive like emotional missions offering where they would, you know, hard sell all the kids to give money and I would not bring money with me. Because if it's in my pocket, it's going in the offering plate. So I'm not going to respond to that stuff. We plan ahead of time. It's premeditated. So that's intentionality. It's not like, that means that at the end of the year, I shouldn't be surprised at what's on my tax receipt. Leftover giving says, you'll find out at the end what you give. Premeditated, prioritized giving says, I know what it's going to be because it's intentional. It's not spontaneous. It's under control. It's not driven by my emotions. See, when giving is driven by your emotions, that's not stewardship. It's not me making the decisions. It's my emotions making the decisions. And that lends itself to creating a cycle of manipulation. How does the cycle of manipulation work? Well, that means that if you only give when your emotions demand it, then me standing up here at the front across in church, I need to manipulate your emotions to get you to give. And then you only respond to emotions. So there's a cycle of manipulation that happens. We don't want to do that here. I don't want to manipulate people's emotions. I think there's something wrong about that. So we don't want to make sales pitches. Now, there's still room to respond to God's voice. It doesn't mean, well, I've planned all my giving, then, so if I go by a homeless guy, too bad, gave it the office. It's not that. It's when I plan my giving, I'm a disciplined, practical giver, and there's still room for spontaneity over and above that. I still allow God to tap me on the shoulder and say, here's an opportunity for you to give here, or here's an opportunity for you to give there. To give within your means, plus a little bit of a faith stretch, it requires planning. If you're giving spontaneously all the time, you're either not giving generously or you're giving beyond your means. When you plan it, you sit down, you look at your budget and say, okay, how am I going to give? What am I trusting God with? How am I going to give within my means? And then what am I trusting a little bit beyond my means? Because I'm allowing him to partner with me with my finances. Andy Stanley says, often stepping outside your comfort zone is not careless irresponsibility, but a necessary act of obedience. So practical trusting in God with our finances is prioritized and is premeditated. The third thing is that it's programmed. Okay, the things that you care about, you plan for. There are people that put money away for vacation. Why? Because they want to go on vacation. That's what they plan for. Your car is falling apart, you need to save up for a new car. You plan for it, not just in your budget, but in your schedule. Because if you put it in your budget but not your schedule, then it never gets into your budget. So, and it takes a little bit of discipline, but there's all kinds of tools for that now. I mean, we started a car budget, and it just comes out of our account automatically every month. So that it's just automatic. We're planning for it. It's in our schedule. Paul says, collect every week. So what that means is an accumulation happening, because every week it's programmed. He says, put away a portion of the money you earned. The original language says whatever you were blessed with, not just earned. Okay, whatever you're blessed with. What we earned, we're blessed with. What we're blessed beyond with, what we earn from time to time. I looked this up in a translation called Net Bible, which is more word for word. And it says, each of you should set aside some income and save it to the extent that God has blessed you. Not save whatever you might happen to spare. Save whatever God has blessed you. When you give consistently, you become immune to giving compulsively or emotionally. It's consistent, it's regular, programmed. Or it also gives you an immunity to feeling like you can't give, you're incapable because of fear. So trusting God financially, giving, investing in his kingdom is prioritized, premeditated, and programmed. It's also proportionate, okay? When it's done best, I believe it's done proportionally. Jesus and his disciples, they were in the temple, and they were watching people put money in, and they were kind of remarking on how some people were putting a lot of money in. And the text says that there was like a giving box, and archaeology and some other sources they've described these as trumpets. Well, why is a giving box like a trumpet? Because it would be like a trumpet bell, and it would go through the wall directly in the treasury, right? You put the money in, sucks right in the treasury. When we bought this building in 2004, I think, where the office is now is where the ticket booth used to be. People would go up and pay for their tickets, and there was one of those suction tubes like they used to have at Costco, and the cashier would take the money, I guess, and stick it in one of these tubes, and would suck it up into the ceiling, and it would go right into the safe, so nobody could steal it. Well, that's same kind of thing they had in the temple. I actually read or heard something recently. It was a prediction from the late 1800s of what life is going to be like in the future. And most of the predictions were way off. One of them was close. It said, in the future, you will be able to send a letter across the country almost instantaneously. And it was like, well, they're describing email. But they said, we'll be able to do that through pneumatic tubes that will cross the continent. Yeah, okay, not quite like that. That's a little different. So that's a huge digression, but a tangent. Jesus and his disciples are watching people put money in, and they're remarking about the people putting a lot of money in, and Jesus says, no, look at that old widow. She put in two tiny coins. I think the text is, it's like something like a tenth of a day's wage. He said, she gave more because she put in everything she had to live on. Jesus is saying that the rich gave out of their abundance, but she gave all. See, God's concern is not the amount you give. God's concern is the proportion you give. A person who's a billionaire that gives $10,000 is not giving a lot. Why? Because he's more interested in your heart than your money. God doesn't need your money, but he wants your heart. If you remember, I said this before, what you give is an indicator of your heart. What you care about, what you're passionate about, your money demonstrates that. In fact, you can lead your heart with your money. Jesus says where your treasure is, your heart is. He doesn't say where your heart is, your treasure is. Where you put your money, that's what you care about. You invest in your car, you care about your car. You invest in your guitar, you care about that. You invest in God's kingdom, that's where your heart goes. You can lead your heart with your money. So proportionate giving is percentage giving. There's an Old Testament model, and we've talked about it here before, the tithe, the tenth, 10%. That was the expectation in the Old Testament. You give 10%. There were actually three different versions of that, and so some years people would be expected to give 30%. And I've heard this over and over and over as a pastor across this church. That's Old Testament. We don't need to follow that rule anymore. We don't need to follow that percentage. Okay, let's look New Testament. There's a story of Zacchaeus. He was a tax collector, and he has this encounter with Jesus, and he has dinner with him, and Zacchaeus, he's transformed. And he says, I'm going to give 25% of all my money to the poor. Is that a better percentage? 25%? Better than 10? New Testament. No, you don't believe me. Okay, the chapter before that story, Jesus is met by a rich young ruler, and the guy says, what do I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, give everything that you have. Sell it. Give the money to the poor. That's 100%. Is that a better percentage? So yeah, I really believe that 10% is a great starting point. Now, that's really challenging for people. But the argument that, well, that's Old Testament, it doesn't apply, it doesn't wash, because the expectation in the New Testament is higher, not lower. See, again, it's less about how much you give than how much of yours you give. We're not comparing tax receipts at the end of the year. That's not what matters. What matters is where your heart is. Jesus makes it clear that it's the proportion that matters. Giving proportionately allows us to painlessly increase our giving as our income increases. If you give it, let's say I'm going to commit to $200 a month, I give $200 a month to the church, and then I get a raise, and I'm giving $200 a month, and, well, I don't, like, that's kind of painful to increase that to $250 or $300. But if you're giving 10%, it's 10% no matter what. There are some people that take their 10%, and they increase by 11 when they get a raise, and then 12. I read of one guy, he said, I left 25% years ago behind because he kept on getting raises when he kept on giving more. I heard of one guy that was complaining, he earned a fair bit of money, and was complaining to his pastor and said, 10% is a lot of money. I make a lot. Like, you have to understand, that's this much money. Like, that's a lot of money. And the pastor said, okay, if you'd like, I will pray for you. I will pray for you that God would reduce your income so it won't be so much money for you to give. Some people ask this question, gross or net? Do I, if I'm going to give proportionately, do I give it on my gross income or my net income? And there's two answers to that. The one I think is a little bit simplistic, but people like this answer, okay? If God promises a return, if he promises a blessing when we give, do you want that blessing on your gross or on your net? For me, personally, the way I view it is my primary allegiance is to God before government. And when I pay taxes, I'm paying taxes towards the government. In fact, I'm not even paying it towards the government. I'm paying it partly to me. Because I drive on roads that taxes pay for. I've put my kids in public school. Actually, I went to public school too, right? Those things are for my benefit. So we give on gross because I understand that those other things we as a society benefit from and I personally have benefited from. So that's the less simplistic answer, but that's my answer. So the best kind of giving, the best kind of investing in God's kingdom is prioritized, premeditated, programmed, and proportionate. And finally, it's purposeful. The message is entitled, Not by Accident. When we give, we should be giving on purpose. The context of the passage, Paul is saying, I'm going to come by and I collect the money that you have collected and we're going to bring it to the central location, the church in Jerusalem. Why? Why would they do that? Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, there was a famine. It had actually been predicted, and it came true. There was this famine in Jerusalem, and they were in dire need. But the second thing is when people became new followers of Jesus, particularly in Jerusalem, they were ostracized from their community. It's still true in many parts of the world today. So there are places in the world today where to get baptized. Baptism, in one sense, symbolizes death and new life. And there are places in the world where if you are baptized, you are excommunicated from your family, and you are ostracized from your community, which means that in a world where there's no social services, there's no welfare, there's no EI, you're on your own. And so the church became this community where the people who were ostracized, it became their new family, and there was provision there, and that's part of where the money went. It also went to a central location for the propagation of the mission, to spread the message of Jesus. So in the Old Testament, the center of worship was the temple. All the money went to the temple to facilitate worship and to take care of the poor. And then between the testaments, the synagogues developed, and they became local community centers, same thing. The giving would go to that. And the church is the same. And I mean, you can give anywhere. You can demonstrate your trust in God, but I believe the biblical model is that you give to your center of worship. It's also an expression of unity. So these Gentile believers, they were not Jewish, they were demonstrating unity with the Jewish church in Jerusalem, saying we're all the same family. It was a concrete expression of love. It was a concrete expression of partnership. And then finally, when you give to your home church, wherever that might be, whether it's this one or another one, there's an accountability there. Paul says, Paul isn't coming to take the money. He says, send messengers. So representatives from them are bringing it. And Paul said, if you want, we can give them letters of recommendation, and we can travel with them as well. There's an expectation of accountability. That's why here at Crossland Church, we strive for financial transparency. We try to make all of the finances as clear as we can. We try to send out regular emails if people are on the email list. But all of last year's audited financial statement is on the website. We have a pastor's report that has graphs showing where we spent the money, and this coming year's budget is also on the website. You can find that at crosslands.ca/partnership. In fact, somebody was telling me after the first service, he says they were shocked to see how financially transparent we were being, maybe based on experiences at other churches where it wasn't so transparent. And we try to do that as much as possible. Now, the one kind of exception is that we don't show individual salaries because, in a sense, that's nobody's business. But if you really want, you could look at the total salary amount, divide it by four, and see how everybody here is getting rich based on their salaries. We also have info meetings from time to time. We had a town hall meeting in the fall. And, I mean, we had a good bunch of people, but not a lot of people. And so that tells me one thing. Either people are completely apathetic about, you know, kind of what's going on behind the scenes, or they're very trusting. I hope it's the trusting, not the apathetic. I really do. But yeah, we try to be open. In fact, we welcome people emailing questions. We try to answer them as best as we can. Now, that kind of accountability doesn't mean, it's not an invitation to manipulation or control. I was at another church sometime in the past, and there was somebody that disagreed with some of the leadership decisions. So what they said is they stopped giving to the budget and started giving to the building fund, because that was a statement of disagreement. It's like, yeah, that's manipulation. That's control. That's not the point. No leadership is perfect. There may be a decision you disagree with. Maybe to facilitate the two services, you know, the way we used to make coffee in the urns took about an hour, which means that the coffee team would have to come an hour before to fill it up, turn it on, and then they're done. So we spent some money to change the coffee system. It's on for the first time this morning. And maybe you disagree with that. Maybe you think, I really like urn coffee. You'd be the only one in the world, probably. But I disagree with that decision, so I'm going to stop giving to the church. That's a waste of money. Really? That's kind of not the point. That's not accountability. That's just trying to get what you want. Giving to your center of worship, whether it's just this church or another church, is not a means to get what you want. But if you truly suspect that there's some kind of malicious mismanagement, you should be asking questions. And if you absolutely cannot trust the leadership of the church you're attending, whether it's this church or another church, and that's why you refuse to give, you shouldn't be attending that church. Go find a church where you do trust the leadership. That's kind of the way it works, so that we're all in partnership together. So practically trusting God with our finances. To do it well is prioritized, premeditated, programmed, proportionate, and purposeful. I did it. 5-piece. I'm really proud of myself. So I'm gonna move on to a challenge. This is where it gets tough, because this is where people can say, well, now you're just manipulating. And here's where I kind of feel stuck, because I want everybody to experience the full blessing of what it means to be an investor in God's kingdom financially. There's blessing involved in that. And so you might think it's a sales pitch. Well, do it or don't, right? I mean, you can keep doing the same thing, just going to keep managing my finances the same way I always have, or you can invite and allow God to participate in your finances by investing with him. You can maintain control over your money. You can stay in your comfort zone, or you can extend trust in our provider who has both the motivation and the means to take care of us. Because he does. He's God. You can continue to live in fear of the future, or you can courageously open the possibility for the miraculous in your own finances. So how do you do it? How do you take that risk? Well, if you're going to give proportionately, I mean, that Old Testament model is 10%, and some people go, that's mind-boggling, I can't do it. Well, okay, could you do 5%? Could you try that? If you're really tight, could you try 2%? Could you try 1%? What level of risk are you going to start at to allow God to prove himself to you? As I said last week and the week before, in our finances is the only area where God invites us to test him. My younger son Graydon was telling me over Christmas, because you listen to podcasts, you got to listen to this one podcast, The Knowledge Project. And this guy, he tries to find all the smartest people he can and kind of distill in a 30-minute or 45-minute interview what they have figured out because they're really smart. What knowledge have they gained? And share it through the podcast to the rest of the world. And in the first 4 or 5 podcasts, I think 3 or 4 of them were on the market. It was on money. And at least 2 people said, to make money in the market, you have to play the long game. If you're a day trader, you can't make money. In fact, if you're watching your stocks every day or every week and it's giving you anxiety, stop looking at it. Invest your money and look at it once a month or once every 6 months. It's in the long game. And that's true. If you want to see, God move in your finances, take that risk, 1%, 2%, 5%, 10%. But you do it for like 3 months or 6 months. Make a decision on that. And I guarantee you, you're going to be squeezed at some point. You're going to be challenged. And if you're consistent with it, God will come through. That's what he promises. The last thing I would say about that is, if you're married, do not make that decision unilaterally. Don't make a decision without your spouse. If you're a husband, include your wife in the decision. If your wife includes your husband, and they're a spice, that's plural, of spouse, that can't agree on that. I told a story last week of my mother, my mom and dad, and my dad did not agree, and my mom took the pool of money that she had $30 a week every 2 weeks for groceries, and she started giving 10% of that until she saw God come through, and then through that she convinced my dad that they would take the whole kit and caboodle and start giving proportionately off that. So, one thing I haven't done for the past 2 weeks, I have not highlighted our giving options here at Crossings Church, and that was deliberate, and because I said this week we're going to talk about the practical how. So if you want to give to Crossings Church, here are our giving options. We try to have as many as we can. You give cash and check. There are envelopes around the envelope holder things, and there are giving boxes. We don't take up an offering in the service. We don't want to make this coercive manipulative or whatever. But we have that available. You can do text giving. That's my giving method of choice. Send a text and it goes in immediately. Just have to set it up with my credit card ahead of time. You can do debit and credit card. We have a self-serve station at the information desk. You can do it online, which is very popular with a lot of people. And direct withdrawal is really popular at Crossings Church. Set it up. We got like 5 people that do that. It's not popular at all. If you need any help with that, anyone at the information desk can help you with that. But those are the options that we have. I'm going to look at text messages very quickly. We have one. If the expectation in the New Testament is that you give to the church proportionate to what you make, where does charity, not necessarily religious, come in? How much do you think we should aim to help others in a financial way? So what we do is we give proportionately to the church, and then everything above and beyond that, we would consider it above and beyond. Like we used to be called tithe, tenth, and offering. So we sponsor a couple of kids, and those are our two commitments, okay? Our proportionate giving to the church and our child sponsorships. And then above and beyond that, we kind of take it as it comes. You know, if somebody comes to the door, we rarely give to that, but we'll go to fundraising banquets and things like that. And so it's kind of like, that's our starting point, is our proportionate giving, child sponsorship, and then whatever we decide. I mean, you can pray about that or discuss it with your financial advisor or your spouse or whatever. I don't have really strong advice on that, but I do know that generosity is rewarded in God's kingdom. And then I want to close the service. Before I do, we're here as a community of followers of Jesus at Crossings Church, and there are people that are here that are not. And you may go, there's something, this whole idea about living life with God, and it's not just having God participate in our finances, but every area of our life. We just struggle with finances the most, usually. But if that's something, if you want to be a follower of Jesus, how do you do that? I want to share that with you right now, and we do this every week. It's as simple as ABC. It starts with A, admit. Admit your need for God. What I'm doing right now isn't working for me. I need God to participate in my life. I want to have that relationship with him. And then B stands for believe. Believe that that relationship is available and is made available through Jesus coming. That's why we sing all these songs to Jesus and express our love to him, because he's the one that makes relationship with him, with God our Father, available through his death and resurrection. And then C is commit to him. You can't live the new life while living the old life at the same time. It's a change in direction. Commit to living life fully. And how do you do that? Well, first of all, is you participate in a community of followers of Jesus, and we're always thrilled to have new people join us. So I would welcome you to participate in our community here. And if that's a decision you want to make today, I think there's something you need to do, make it a calendar date, right? Mark it on the calendar. This day something changed. And one of the best ways to do that is go onto our crossings.live website through your smart device and put in your contact information. Just check the box. I want to be a follower of Jesus today. There's also another one. I want more information, which is valid too, because I don't recommend anybody makes a decision like this flightily. Like, it's not a small decision, it's a big decision. So go onto that app and check that. If you don't have a smart device, we have like real paper versions of that available. There's some at the back of the brochure holder there, and there's a bunch in the lobby as well. Just fill it out, slip it into one of the giving boxes, or give it to the information desk. So I'm going to ask that you would stand. We're going to close the service today. And we always finish with prayer. So you're welcome to stay for prayer after the service is closed. Theater One becomes a prayer. And we also encourage people to have meaningful conversations with one another, particularly if you see somebody you've never met before. We just ask you to have those conversations in the lobby so that this can become a place where people pray. So if you want to talk, just kind of scoot out as quick as you can. But the prayer focus today is challenging people to commit financially, because that's a tough decision to make. It's a tough call to make. But the kids program will run another 15 minutes to facilitate prayer if you want to stay for that. I want to close with this. Wherever you invest your money, that's where your heart is. You can do it haphazardly, flippantly, or you can do it intentionally. Practically. So how are you going to respond to the challenge to greater obedience to God? What are you going to do to engage God in your finances? What will you do to step beyond your comfort zone and allow God to do amazing things in your life? Let's pray. Father, I thank you for every person that is here today. I thank you that you love us completely, unconditionally, that there's nothing that we need to do that would make you love us more, because that would be impossible. You love us completely. And you have the capability to take care of all of our needs. Father, I ask this morning that you would increase our trust in you. Father, for those that that are offended by hearing about a message about money, I'm sorry, but I know that you bless. I know that you take care of us. And so we can't just not say anything about that. Father, I pray that you would open our eyes to see the possibility of partnership with you. You would open our eyes to see the incredible future that there is in walking with you completely in every area of our lives, including our finances. And I pray that we would see you come through over and over and over. Father, I pray that this community here of followers of Jesus would become increasingly passionate about generosity, and that we would see the result of that. We would see your blessing increasing, compounding in our lives, and we would also see the mission to reach the other 80,000, to reach people with your love, be fueled by the resources of that. That as a church, we would move forward. Our efforts would be compounded. Our hearts would be turned to the mission as they follow our finances. That we wouldn't just see budget increase, Lord. We would see participation increase. And that we would be a difference maker in this community. In Jesus' name, amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.